Guys, you're a fan of the Sly Guy podcast and you want extra content, early access to the podcast, and you want vlogs, you want other series and other secret bits and bobs, and early access to merch and other fun, you can head to patreon.com/Sly Guy podcast, whereas for as little as £2 a month, you can get all the aforementioned treats and surprises. Or if you can't be bothered using the old web browser, you can just follow the link in the description of this episode. The Sly Guy podcast is brought to you in association, as always, by Modest Beer. Modest Beer are the number one beer in terms of flavor that you can get in the market right now. There you go. You've heard it from me. It's delicious. Modest Beer have a wide range of fantastic brews for me and for yous. And if you want to know more about Modest Beer, you can head to their website, www.modestbeer.co.uk, where you can check out all the merch, you can check out all the brands, you can check out all the types of beer that they have available. And if you want to purchase it, you can do so. And that's fine. You can work away and you can go through the checkout and you can pay full price. Or if you want 15% off, you can use the discount code SlyPA15. That's my little gift to you. SlyPA15 at checkout to get 15% off your Modest Beer merch. Ladies and gentlemen, I am on tour. I am doing my show roleplay across the province, country, whatever you want to call it, without causing an offence, throughout May, June, and a bit of July. If you want to know more, you can follow the link in the description of the video, or you can check out my website, daveelliottcomedy.com, for all information on tickets, or on my social media as well. It's all linked there. Come and see me wherever I'm doing. I'm bringing the roleplay show to you. It's kicking off on the 10th and 11th of May in the Lyric Theatre, Belfast. And the tickets are limited now, so if you want to come, be quick.
I'm the Sly Guy.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Sly Guy podcast. Wherever you are, I hope that this finds you well, because I wish everybody well in the world, apart from Harry Kane probably, but other than that, everybody I wish well. This episode was one of my favourite Sly Guy podcast episodes for a long time. Now, I've had a lot of fun, silly episodes over the last couple of months. You know, things have been going really well. New viewers, new listeners, I appreciate it. Thank you for sharing the good word of the Sly Guy podcast. But this week's episode, in parts, was a little bit more serious. And I think that's sometimes important to maybe switch things up and put across a serious message. My guest was somebody who's a friend of the show, who's been on before. We've had a great chat before. He is a much more pumped version of this guy. He is a fun, big, ball bear guy. It's Big Bear himself, Chris McNaughton. And what an episode it was. It's always a pleasure to get Chris in and chat, from things to fitness to Disneyland. And then we finished off on a more sort of serious note and covered some mental health aspects. So it was an important conversation to have. You know, something that I think is good to put out there. Now, obviously, if you're tuning in here for laughs and shits and gigs, maybe this one's a wee bit different. But it was a really good episode to have. Really insightful. And I hope you guys enjoyed listening to this podcast as much as I personally enjoyed having the conversation with me and my mate, Big Bear. Big Bear is back in the podcast. Chris McNaughton, good to see you again, mate. How's the form?
Good,
keeping
mate,
well?
Yeah.
They're just begrudging my bad seats that I have. They're tight. You know what?
Last time it was all right, but I put on a few stones there last then.
And no,
she's neatly.
Yeah, these seats, I don't usually like seats with sides. So I think whenever we rejig the studio, we'll just get rid of it so you can get the legs akimbo and just have the space. Because as people be like, oh, here, man, see, you men, you have to always sit. I'm like, I don't know. The thing with being a man, though, is you have equipment which you don't have if you're not a man. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's more comfortable to sit with your legs, I guess. And see, if you have bigger legs, too, there's less room for everything in there, so you have to stretch. So these are, they're problematic.
No, I see, my legs, right, used to be literally twice the size of what they are now. Mm-hmm. Whenever I was like at the biggest,
yeah.
So it sort of, because they were so big, it taught me to walk in a certain way.
Uh-huh.
But then when I went down in weight, I was 40 kilos heavier than what I am now. But my way of walking's never changed.
Right. Okay.
It's always walking like I've got these massive legs.
Yeah. So it's like the gait, they say, with dogs. It's like your gait has been offset to being.
But I can't, like, I just like see the idea of crossing legs, yeah, and all that.
No. Oh. Do you have to, like, grab your, like, trousers if you were to throw your leg up in any way to...
I can... When it comes to flexibility, like, I can still do the splits, like, uh-huh, proper splits. And I can put like my foot, like right up the very top above my head, and all, like, I still got flexibility, but they just don't close in that way.
So it's, you've got flexibility, but not practicality. Lucky you're not Scottish anyway. If you're wearing a kilt, that'd be, that's where the problems would arise. But no, it's a strange thing, because I'm sort of, I know, I'm in the middle of trying to, I'm training for the marathon. So if you just want to donate, we'll put the link that we're doing for the NI Hospice, so you can donate there. But the difference now, because I've been doing a 90-day program to try to cut weight, basically, and I've been getting back in the gym, loving it. It's been great fun. But then took a wee dip towards the end. So, like, I found, you know, when you can do a wee run of things, you're focused. And then whenever, like, it started off with January, quiet month for stand-up usually, so that's grand. You can focus 100%. Then you start getting busy. It all kinds of, and then I got a wee bit sick, and it just was, and I went out for pints one night, and I was fucking, took me weeks to recover from that.
Yeah.
And now it's like, right, I'm going again, focus just on doing the marathon. But it takes that wee time to kind of get used to changing and doing things differently.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing. Like, I think, like, being a bigger fella and actively going, right, to not lift weights and be like, I'm not doing that, I'm just going to stretch and I'm going to run. It's weird, because the weights, I think, is the thing that keeps you, your mind going.
They say, sort of training wise, when it comes to runners, like, if I had any running clients that were coming in, I only get them doing strength condition, i.e. weights work once a week, and the rest of that's all basically their running program. Any more than that, you do cause complications then, and like get injuries and stuff like that a lot more frequently. But maybe two strength and condition sessions at the very most, but weights still play a part in it, but it's just a very, very small part, really, in the overall thing now when it comes to running. But the last time I was in with you, like, I had dropped a good bit of weight and stuff. Like a strongman was done, but I thought mentally I was okay to not be Big Bear anymore.
Yeah.
Wasn't.
No. And because, see, when you were in last time, you seemed great, you know, is there something, like, did you then be like, nah, I need to put on a bit of mass here, I need to bulk, or what's the...
I think my whole brand and image is being Big Bear. Like, I'm not going back to strongman again. Like, I cannot...
Yeah.
Like, the thought of the back pain and all again, and every morning, I'm like, nah, the hell with that there. But just that big image, big guy. Like, I went into American football and stuff, and then adapted my training quite a bit for it. And the muscle mass was just flying off me.
Yeah.
Like, flying off me. And my shoulders, I was losing my shoulders and all. And, you know, I was walking into restaurants and walking into shops, and nobody was looking anywhere. Whereas normally the entire restaurant are like, you know, the minute you walk through the door. And maybe it is vanity, I don't know. I just know I'm not confident the way I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not ready to give it up yet. But I had to do it healthily, like, you know, I did say that I want to actually focus, because I've never done bodybuilding before.
Yeah.
I've never done like that bodybuilding style training, trying to get big. Never trained that way ever before. My training's always been to get stronger.
Yes.
And then if I get bigger, well, I get bigger. You know, don't really mind. But now, I said here, I would give this 3 hard months to put on as much muscle as I could and see how my body reacts. If my body reacts well and it's fine and I feel healthy and feel fit, then I'm going to push to the end of the year to be the most muscular and big I've ever been, which will be an awesome to see. Like, you know.
Yeah, because that's the thing that I have found strange. Like, whenever, like, I'm talking with my wife or something, she'd be like, oh, you know, if you're losing weight, oh, you look smaller, you look thinner and whatever. And I'm like, oh, I feel a bit better, I feel a bit off my face. You do feel better when you lose a bit. Mm. But then it's like, I don't think I would like to keep getting smaller and smaller. You know what? I still like to... And that's where I made a problem, is then I started being, nah, I like the lift, and then you're doing your squats and you do your wee fitness test at the start of the program, and you're like, I was saying, I could squat more than that.
Yeah,
you know, I can squat more than that. And then you keep going, you're like, I can squat more than this. And you're like, oh, I like this again. And then you're like, the scales aren't moving. So I think whenever you are big, like, and have you been big all your life, would you have said? Yeah. So then
I was born 11 pounds, kept fucking growing. I
needed to I'm used to that almost. Yeah. So, like, I'd like to lose. So now I'm trying to run. I'm like, right, I need to just go and do 4 weeks of just the true and recovery. Because I got a bit cocky. I did the first run a few weeks back, and I thought, this is grand. You know, I set myself an hour to run, and I'd done half an hour. I'm like, that's... And then I went again, and I just felt the next couple of days really sore in my Achilles. And I have this real paranoia of tearing my Achilles. I just think it's my destiny to happen.
It's a dirty, dirty injury. Like, I've seen that in strongman a few times, and it is the most injury I've ever seen. Like, It's I know a couple of boys have had it and the rehab coming after it and stuff, and like it's just game over, like it's just shut the doors, like it's just, don't know, like some people do come back from it well, like, but it's just a long drawn out process, like you know, the rehab it.
But it's weird, isn't it, whenever, like, obviously bodies can change. It'll be very interesting to see how you can take what you've done from strongman and the bodybuilding. Now, it's so people always go to me, it sounds a bit weird, but I have real interest in bodybuilding. Like, I really enjoy it as a sport. Everything, like, I keep on top of who's the Olympias, the classics, the physiques, all that kind of stuff. And even whenever, like, I'm on this program, I think it focuses my mind to listen to, like, weightlifting podcasts or bodybuilding podcasts, and just to hear the sheer science of what it, the tiniest wee things it takes to change something, or it's insane. And in terms of your training, did you go, right, I'm going to do the bodybuilding, and did you properly sit down and go, right, this is how I'm going to change all the calories, everything? What was your process to go from strongman to bodybuilding?
Well, whenever I stopped strongman, I went to American football, and everything was adapted for the training for American football. And then when I decided recently there, right, I'm going to focus on, I want to put more muscle on it, you know, that bodybuilding style training, the whole training adjusted, like, full 360, like nothing was very similar at all whatsoever. The first 5 to 6 weeks was very, very high rep, very low rest, loads of lactic acid build up and stuff. Then we dropped the reps and put more time under tension and stuff like that there, you know. So the sessions are very, very extreme. Calories is sitting up pretty good at the moment, but I don't want to go into the old strongman mindset of me, you see, was as long as I get stronger and I'm fitter, I don't care what the body looks like or what the scales say. As long as I'm fit and as long as I'm strong. So I didn't care if body fat went on with it. But this time around, I can't afford for body fat to go on, so I'm trying to keep that down. So I'm doing fasted cardio in the mornings, and then like that should keep it at bay, so that I could sort of get a lean size. I just want good size on. I don't want to, like, I can't afford to put any bad size on and stuff. But yeah, trying to keep the diet as clean as I can. And afford my luxuries, like, in areas that I appreciate my luxuries, rather than just, like, you know, bad areas and stuff like that. There, like simple things like dinner at night, I don't mind a Coke Zero.
Yeah.
But sugar free Rebel in the morning, no.
Yeah. No.
No. No, that's a bit full fat. Like, you know what I mean?
They get you going. No, but it's like, it's such a, to me, a balance of everything. You know, it's. Obviously, if you strip everything down to most basic, when people say you want to lose weight, they go, eat less, move more. But I've noticed that everything is such a bad, like, for me anyway, personally, everything has to sort of, like, I have to go to myself, right, training is the number one thing. Like, health and what I eat is the number one thing. And then, like when I was doing my goals for the year, it was like, that has to be number one. Health, the longevity of just being, feeling better has to be, and then hopefully the rest will come in. But then it's like, you have to have that, you need to make sure you, like, for me, I work better if I stick to the routines too. So if I get up early doors, like 6 in the morning, get out with the dog, that's always me starting. Like, there's maybe 7,000 steps done, and then I'm trying to do intermittent fasting at the minute, and again, I know the science behind it's that
very good for big guys,
but for me, a lot of it's in the basic, you can't eat past this time, you know what I mean? And it's like, I know the sort of science behind it, but then also the thought process of, if you can only eat within that window, sometimes if you go past it, you just don't eat, you know, and that to me is where I'd be like,
there's a guy, Shane, I'm pretty sure his name's Shane German, he's MST Systems, and he has a lot of stuff, he even has it on his YouTube and stuff, talking about fasting. He does incredible things with fasting, especially in big guys and strong men and stuff. So, see, whenever you prep for a strongman show, you put on a lot of bad weight. Like, genuinely, whenever you compete in a strongman show, you're probably your most blown up.
Yeah.
Not out of shape, but you've got a lot of bad weight and stuff. And after a comp, you don't want to go straight into prep for your next comp holding any bad weight. So, you can go on, like, a 10, 12-week cut, you know, to get rid of that. But his versions of it is through fasting. He can do that in 2 to 3 weeks and achieve that in 2 or 3 weeks. But he ran, the thing about it was, he ran blood tests before and after the fasting on the guys that he had worked with, and he also took, like, PBs before and after. And now, when I say this guy was fasting, and, like, obviously I'm not advised to do this unless you have it properly researched, he's fasting for as long as you possibly can, but still weightlifting and lifting heavy.
Does that mean every day or just
as long as you possibly can until you break.
Yeah.
And then when you break, you go to Nando's and you have a refeed there, and then you get back on for as long as you possibly can. I've done it before, and it works really well. You don't need food to be strong, as in when you're only lifting one or two reps.
Yeah.
You need food for fitness and endurance, but you don't actually need it for strength, so you can continue to get stronger while you're in a fasting state.
Yeah.
It works very, very effectively. It works very, very fast. But you know, the thing about it is, this is more for pro athletes who are coming off the back of it and then continuing a proper cycle, proper nutrition, proper training, coming off the back of it again. But it's very, very smart the way he sort of had it all thought out and stuff, because he's right in what he's saying. Like, you don't want to spend 12 weeks after a comp trying to lose weight, and then you know, really you've lost like 9 weeks of strength training. It's like 2 to 3 weeks in the fasting state, and then restart your training. It's very, very effective, like, but it's fucking hard to do.
And what was the longest you managed to go on a fast?
I did 3.5 days. First day, horrible. Crave everything, like all the crap on the first day. Second day, you crave like vegetables and all the good stuff, because obviously this is what your body's telling you. But see, the second day, it's like you're on some type of drugs. You are like one screwed on everything, like your energy, you're just locked in with work and all. Like second and third day, that's the way it was. It was just so focused and everything. And then I started crashing then in the third day night, going into the fourth day, I started to crash. And then I went and had a refeed then, and then a couple more days then after that. And then sort of repeat that process until you get to the stage you're sort of happy, like, you know. But all you really was doing was electrolytes, black coffees. And that was really it, like, you know. But I think it's more of a thing for a pro athlete to do. Like, I never advise the average Joe to do it, like, you know. But what was fascinating to me was that you didn't lose strength, and you lost very, very, very little muscle.
That's what you think, because obviously, in terms of the most basic form, if you're building strength, is the recovery of the muscle that you've damaged from lifting. Mm-hmm. So, and whenever you're doing the, are you still like lifting the heavy? Like, are you doing shorter reps, or are you doing?
My training never really changed, but there was nothing in the training that you would look at as endurance style training. So rep ranges were very low and stuff like that there. Nothing really changed. A couple of sessions you felt lethargic, but the strength was still there. I think the thing is, it's short term, so regards to muscle, like if you were to try to do it long term, then definitely the muscle would break down. But really, you were, when it came to your training sessions, you were in, do your lifts, get out, and not like damage the body too much, if you know what I mean, because obviously it's not in a state to repair. Like,
and how much of that is like, because I often think about training and anything you try, a challenge or whatever, it's all, I think a big component of it is whether you're mentally ready to do it or you want to do it, you know. So how much of that, in terms of the fact, like, if you know, like the amoeba effect, because I always think that whenever my cupboard's stocked with supplements and vitamins, I'm always better. And it's not maybe not necessarily in what I'm taking, but it's the fact that I've spent the money on getting that and maybe using it. I'm like, I'm actively tying that into, I'm eating better and I'm training more.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, how much of that do you think the fasting is? Do you think you're wanting the fast to make you feel better and your mind goes, oh? Or do you think that
I think you need to be like mentally in a very motivated, like, focused place to even start it, because otherwise, like, you're going to feel going into day two, like, you know what I mean? But you do, like, the first day is awful, but definitely, and a lot of people say this, the second and third day, you're just, like, focused, like, really, really focused, and your energy levels are through the roof, like, it's insane. It's just mad the way the body can adapt and react, like, do you know what I mean?
Because, and everyone, I suppose, is different as well, because I sort of think, like, I like to train in the morning before I would eat, no matter what that is, whether it's weights or cardio or whatever.
Yeah.
And then there obviously would be some times where if you know yourself, you're feeling a bit shit, you eat something and then you go in and train. But more often than not, and I think, like, the weights are, my weights aren't really affected whether I eat or not. And I just am thinking, you know, I have enough sort of stored energy on me the body can kind of feed off the
weights. For me in the morning, I can do like some cardio in the morning. But I see touching weights in the morning. I just cannot do it. Like, and I remember whenever I opened the gym, and I used to work in the banks before, I always would have trained like 8 o'clock at night. When I opened up the gym, I started having to train midday, and that was killing me.
Yeah.
Because I'm used to training at night, and then I'd go to midday. But I try to do morning weight sessions. I just don't have it. I just don't train well at that time at all. Like, but I just about get. I'm not really a morning person. Like, I do early mornings, but it's purely
necessity.
For success reasons. It's not because I can get out of my bed easy in the mornings. I see me in the mornings, like when the fucking alarm goes off at 5 and that there, and I just lie there, and then it's just be like, just a pure screamer, and like almost like the same type of scream as if I'm about to lift, to get myself out of bed, and then stand up and just be like, I hate this shit so much. Like,
and what's your routine like in the morning? How do you? What's the sort of standard? Because I did a podcast with Kieran Bartlett there recently, and I just was curious to him because obviously he would have a different routine to me, And my sort of mornings are. Try to get up before the kids get up. Try to beat them so I can get up and have the dog walked. And then you don't feel, because my dog, I love him. Don't get me wrong, but he's the sulkiest bastard. You mean your life? See, if I go downstairs or into the kitchen,
what breed of dog is it?
He's a retriever. Oh, wow. So if I go down and I'm wearing what I would sleep in, so I've got the strap on. No, I've got the shorts on. I've got a t-shirt on and my flip flops. He goes. Fuck that. And he'll huff and he'll lie in the corner. Yeah. Whereas if I go down and I'm wearing like a coat and a hat and a pair of trainers, he's like, it's walking time. So I sort of try to get out before. And then by the time there again, it's not even necessarily for cardio or anything. It's like you said, it gets me tuned in for the day. It's like, that's one chore done. And then I'm off and running. So when you're up, what sort of time you get up and what's your morning look like?
I'm back into the 5 a.m. club now, and like when I stopped strongman for a while, I was off it, so I was lying into like 7 or something like that, 7:30. The reason I went back into the 5 a.m. club is I know from past experience it's the only way to be successful. And there was a period of like, not retired because I'm still working and stuff, but I retired from strongman. And there was a period of almost relaxation with training. Well, there was definitely with training. Not so much for work and stuff like that, but it was just more free time. So I felt like you don't need to be getting up at 5 a.m. anymore. Mm-hmm. But, lately, getting back into work routine, get back into training routine, wanting to increase my training again, all that workload came back. And it's like, well, it's not possible to achieve it unless you're getting up at 5 a.m. So back into the 5 a.m. club, and first thing you do is up. If it's decent weather, I'll just do my cardio around the house. If not, I'll go down to the gym, because my cardio in the morning is just steady pace, because I don't want my heart rate to go above 130. So it's just 45 minutes on the treadmill, and then get showered, changed, grab breakfast, get in the office, and then get the head stuck in the work. Between office work and then clients, and then we normally train at like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Get training done, more clients and that there at night, and then try to get in home at night, take the dogs a walk and stuff, get food and all cooked and sort it for the next day, and then try to get to bed early, but see, once you got your bloody phone on you, like, you're never away from work, like, it's just always going, like, you know.
See, but that's the interesting thing too, is to see the parallels and different, you know, being sort of self-employed, is seeing the different parallels, is that you have the same sort of thing. You're doing you're almost doing a few different things, and you all have to pile it in together. And it's hard to kind of.
It's the thing. So I was at an expo last year. Was it last year or before? I can't remember. And I get really pissed off when people shout about this, giving things 100%. I went to this expo, and there was these sort of speakers at it. And this one guy got up and he started talking about, the 100% thing. And he said, I give 100% to my sport, and I give 100%. He kept saying bloody 100%. The more he said it, the more I'm getting bloody triggered. So I stood up and I was like, he says, you're saying you give 100%. I can't remember what a sport was, to be honest. It wasn't bodybuilding, it was something. And I said, you're saying you give 100%. He says, yep, I give 100% to it. And I was like, you run a coaching business, but don't you? And he says, yeah. And I said, do you have a partner or what? He says, I have a girlfriend and stuff. Right, so I said, how do you give 100% to your sport? That means you give 0% to your partner and you give 0% to your business. No, I give 100% to my business. I go, no, mate, life don't work that way. 100% is basically, if you look at a day, you have 24 hours in the day, that's your 100%. You break your percentages of where they're going. But the thing about this here is, when people do this, right, you're self-employed businessman, you have your own fitness goals at the moment, and you're a family man too. You need to look at them there and say, right, putting this percentage here, that percentage here, and this percentage here, right? And say you put 30% towards your fitness goals, and you put 40% towards your 40% towards family, 30% towards business. If you don't achieve what you wanted to initially achieve in your fitness goals, you can look back at that and be like, well, you put family first, you put business first, you were putting 30% towards it. And that's what was, it was 30%, you know, of you. It wasn't 100%.
Yeah.
So how can you ever expect to achieve when you're not putting 100% in for the right reasons? And it's something that always, because people, when they compete, they do shows and stuff like that, and they get second, third, fourth, fifth. And it's like, but you're running the business as well, and you have a wife and you have a weans, and like, you can't always expect that first is going to be possible because you're committing to the other things.
Yeah, but see, I think with that, there's a lot of people fall for things. You know, when you're a salesman and you're selling something, whether it be coaching or whether it be like, you see a lot of like quote unquote life coaches now, and they're saying you need to do all this. A lot of that stuff's not feasible to a lot of people, and then a lot of like, there are days where, like you say, it's almost like a pie chart. If you divvy up, say you've got your family's time, your work, there are days, like say the last couple of weeks there, Easter holidays, so a lot more of my time is because of the kids are home, a lot more. So it's like, they, to me, they are the most important of everything. The rest will come, you know. And again, it's because you can use other elements of the your diagram almost to be an excuse. And I think that's one thing I've certainly been very guilty of, is that I would say, like maybe put my work as my priority for maybe since I moved into being self-employed full time. So I was like, I need to get work because I need to put, you know. And then in that extent, I'd be like, well, then I don't have the time to train. And then the more that comes on, the more out of shape I get. And then that affects the ability of work that I can do, how fit I am, how well I feel, how my mind's taking over.
See, the way I would look at that is
the balance, isn't it?
The way I would look at that is when you become self-employed and your work is your most important thing, you being fit and healthy and having energy is the most important thing for your work. So your training is part of your work. Do you know what I mean? If you're not, if you're eating rightly, if you're not fit and healthy, good nutrition, good diet, you're not capable of doing your work as good. So I would always look that they're connected. They're the same thing. So like, if you had an hour for, or 45 minutes for a walk and food prep and all that there stuff, all your training time, that to me, that's still work. That's not, you're not two separate things, because the reason you're doing it is so you're fit and healthy for the other things, and it's still work to me, like, you know.
But it's just because I have a real thing where like, I maybe look at things sometimes too black and white, you know, like whenever you see, like you can tell the difference between someone who's, I'm sure especially you're very frustrated when you see like the amount of like the increase in online coaches and stuff now, and the like the lifestyle coaches, and it's all like, come and join this program, it's gonna, and you're like, but if anybody is in a bit of a rut, you know, and they do make basic positive changes, no matter what, they're attributing that to maybe what these people tell them. When if you say, get up a wee bit earlier, go do a bit of exercise, eat better, it'll not you, and then they'll be like, oh, this is this life coach has changed everything. And then they're like, it's only $5,000. And then it's like, but you know, so when you see people in like your line of work, how would you say to like a client base to sift out the bullshitters and actually go for the ones who are, you know, genuinely in it to help the people?
Well, so obviously Bear Strong, and the brand, the business brand Bear Strong, is a mental health and mindset business. And, you know, I'm lucky with Bear Strong. I've been able to grow around the world with it now and delivering talks and seminars all about mental health and motivation, just all sorts of stuff. And off the back of that, I have people who've came to me and asked me to mentor them in that way, whether you want to call it lifestyle coaching or whatever like that. But you're just basically mentoring them both in business and both in lifestyle, and bringing business, bringing work, planning strategies and fitness, wellness, diet, bringing all that into the one thing. But I've never advertised that once. And I have about eight people that I sort of do that with at the moment. But I've never advertised it. They've came to me because they've seen, you know, what the Bear Strong's about and the way my lifestyle is and all. They're like, can you help me, type of thing. I wouldn't take any more than eight on, because it's first, for me, it's impossible to have that time to do it. But, and then cost wise as well, like, I'm just charging people my time on a Zoom for an hour to sit and process through things and go through things. Like, you know, that's literally it. So I think sometimes overselling is a bit of a red card. Do you know what I mean? And there is like, we're in the fitness industry now. Marketing strategies within the fitness industry now are cutthroat high, mm-hmm. and they're so successful. And there's a big thing in the fitness industry right now where coaches are being pushed to put your prices up.
Yeah.
Because say me and you, right? Say you had a course there and it's £1,000. Mm-hmm. It's a 6-week course, £1,000. And everything, I have an identical course and I have it at £100.
Mm-hmm.
And five people join yours and five people join mine. Automatically, you're guaranteed better results, almost guaranteed better results, because you've got £1,000 commitment off five people. Mm-hmm. So you've got a financial commitment. So then five people, every time they think about having a Chinese, they're going to be like, oh, I paid Dave £1,000 for this here. Like, no, I think that's a lot of money. Like, it's,
yeah,
get this done. But me over here at £100.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 100 quid. It's all right.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So it's a huge thing. So like a lot of coaches, you know, by putting the prices up, it's not the coach, it's not what they're given, it's not what they're putting across, it's the how much they're charging you money is what is actually getting you results, because you've something to be liable to or whatever, or guilt it towards, because you've invested this money that you could have put elsewhere.
It's like me and my protein shakes, you know. Yeah. It's like I have to go to gym because I bought this fucking protein shake here, you know what I mean? And it's justifying to other people too, almost, you know. Yeah. I think like I've said, like, if you're on a diet, you almost have to tell everybody in your life you're on a diet. So, you know, because I'd be that, I don't know if whether it's a weakness or a strength, but I'd almost be like, so my mum, you need to know I'm on a diet. So if I go around there, if she's making me bacon and eggs, there's no bread. You know what I mean? So just make me scrambled eggs.
You know, those your maths with you, but.
Oh, yeah.
My granny would have been wild for that. Like,
yeah.
If I went to my granny's and she'd have been like, you know, I'm eating healthy now, granny, give her a warning though before you go in. And then, do you want something, you know, you want this, do you want a bit of this, do you want a bit of that? And every time you said no, the next thing you look at her, she had a face.
Like thunder.
She's pure raging because you hadn't ate any food. That's how I ended up as big as I was, a family full of bloody feeders.
Yeah.
But my mum would be the same. You go down to her, you know, do you want this, do you want that? And that's just, I don't know if it's a wee Irish mummy thing or what it is, but I welcome it.
But no, I love it. Especially, see, now, cost of living, you go around your mum's, she gives you, it's tremendous. But my mum will be like, she is the, I want to say she's almost like, she's the yin and the yang, because she'll make you the nice grub, but then she'll slag you for being fat at the same time. You're like, what? You know, like, I remember, and she'll be like, listen, I don't want to hurt your feelings here. And you know when she says that, I'm like, you may as well just say it. Yeah, like, listen, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but you're looking very fat. And that's what she said. And her way of complimenting me, rather than going, oh, you're doing well, she actually goes to me, maybe it was last week or a week before, I was around her house, and she goes, you know what? And I went, well, and she goes, your head's not as round. I know. Cheers, mum. Thanks. You know, I appreciate it. Yeah. And then she'd be like, because that was the thing. See, when you got rid of the hair, she was, the head was just, it was like looking at a moon. I was like, oh, wow. And you invite dirt side end to her. Fuck, she'd have me forever. Yeah, yeah. But yeah.
One time I was most embarrassed, hey, years ago, I was working in the bank and I went for a date with this, though. She was New Zealand, but you know, when New Zealand people sort of sound like someone sound a wee bit English, like an English accent type of thing. And I went to pick her up, took her out for dinner, and we went to the Ma Mason. And we went to a bummed restaurant, it was like a Friday night, Saturday, something. But when I picked her up, she was half cut, she went in the bloody car, and bright red dress and all on and on, like really loud, like really loud. Unless I have a few drinks, I mean, my level of loudness doesn't go up for a while. And we went into the Mal Mason, and now, right enough, the guys took us over, and I was really, really big then, like, and the guy took us over, and the table was like this size. I was twice the width of the table, like, and then where it was quite hard to get into, and she kicked up an absolute scene in a full bloody restaurant, like an absolute scene.
Oh.
And she was all like, how was he supposed to sit there? Look at the size of him. Look at the size of him. How is he supposed to sit? I was like, I'd fucking sit here. It's all right. I'll get him. She's like, you're too big. You're too big. You can't sit there. You can't sit there. I was like, no, I'm actually sitting right now and it's okay. Can you just sit the fuck down?
Yeah.
I was affronted.
Oh, no, that is the worst. Especially as well, whenever, like, see when you're big and you're like, you know you are. And it's like, I was like, so we were on a honeymoon, I think, and we were in somewhere really small, and it was like, I knew that I needed to sort of back out a bit, but this woman was right behind me in her seat. I like didn't want to have to push her, so my chair was back against this woman's chair, and I was like, oh, I'll just go this way a bit, and then she was like, actually no, because there's a full guy behind me. So the whole time you're just sort of sitting going, and it's just, and it's times like that I go, oh, I need to, like whenever I had to get a belt extender on the plane, I'm like, no, this is, I just need to, now I think I was towards the end of last year, I was like, right, this year I just want to feel better, you know. And
I've never had to get the extenders out, but the
fuck you, yeah.
<Fuck's sake. laughs> I mean, there was sometimes I was tight to it, like, but I've sucked in, got a circulation cut off my legs the whole way over, and like, I just refused to get
DVT. No, I just developed it, yeah.
But I'm pretty sure it's Aer Lingus. I can't get in their cubicles anymore, like,
yeah.
They're all good, like. So if I ever get caught short in a plane,
you still wait yourself.
Unless somebody stands at the door, there's nothing I can do, like.
Yeah, but it's, you know, that's the thing, the world's not, because we've a term we use if we're buying furniture and Dave proof. So like, if you get a seat that has to be sturdy, it has to, you know, if I want to move on, because I remember, do you ever see those chairs you get in IKEA and they're like, they go like that, but they're like on the ground like that.
But they are strong, hey?
Some of them, but then if you lean back, it's a better iteration, you know, it's done, you know, it's
cool. John wanted to get them there because they had them in the garage back over in England. And I was like, I'm not fucking sitting on that there, I'll snap like a toothpick. And he was like, no, try it. And then I was like, well, I'm going to break anyone, I'm going to break one before I buy it. Like, you know, and I was proper bouncing on her and all, like, and she's just springing back. Like, it was good job, like, because that was 150 kilo just bouncing up and in.
Because what we got that I couldn't believe was, you know, we fold out chairs for like going to like picnics and stuff. And I was like, they work well. I was on the beach and all that, and it's whatever way it works. It's all science, isn't it? They all even out, and it's like actually distributes the weight good. Whereas it's on one point. Like, I remember I broke a bed once doing the washing, just because I went to put a knee down first, and then I went in the knee just straight through the slats. Ruined.
When I was my biggest, that was the worst thing, was beds, and you had the, like, I don't know how many beds went through. We ended up just getting big, massive books and stocking them in below the beds to like support it, like, instead of just buying, like, we give up and buy a new bed. Because I would have been about 165, 170 kilos then. Like. Mm-hmm. And it was, see, on sofas and stuff, you had to cycle. You couldn't have a spot.
Yeah.
Because if you had a spot, it became a spot.
Yeah.
Like, the foam doesn't return. Mm-hmm. And I got a really good new sofa there, and I thought it would be not well. I got one of these L-shaped ones because I wanted to like lie down and watch TV at night, and the area where I've lay now is like this.
It's like a dog bed.
Yeah, it's fucked. So I've had to turn the other side, but I don't like the other side, because the other side you have to like be like that to watch the TV. I like the other bit where I was, but it's like right down now, like, and that's only mumps.
Yeah,
and it's on the wood, like.
See, that's why I was told you have to puff everything up. You know, your sofa, you have to grind, and
I do puff up like a mattress. My last mattress I flew out. This is no word of a lie, right? I used to get up in the morning, and when I got the last mattress I have, the new one I have now, it seems to be lasting a lot longer. But the last one I had, I used to get up in the morning, and there was that big, a bloody void in it, that big a hole in it, that when I get up, John used to roll down and fall into. So as I get out of bed, you just see how
him waking up,
like, flung in into this hole. And it's like, see, when you like looked at it, it was just a massive big like void. It's expensive being big, like.
Yeah,
and a lot of skinny people don't know this here, or like smaller people don't know this here.
You listen,
our clothes, they're more expensive.
Yes, that's definitely been a thing they've started, is making it dearer now.
Aye, they're making big sizes more expensive.
And then that's another thing too, see, when it comes to going on holidays.
The football.
It takes up the amount of room in your fucking suitcase. Like, I'll maybe have like 5 t-shirts for someone, a normal person's.
Many people watching this right now, like, shut up, you fat.
I know. But you know what? Listen, even the shoulders are right. Even if we were skinny, would still be, I think, a 2X would be
the rides that you the can't smallest. Go on and stuff with.
Oh no, actually, this is what happened to me in Disneyland. Now,
how'd you go on Disneyland?
It was great.
Do you know the Nugget Ride? What was it called? Thunder Nugget Ride?
Oh, the great Thunder Mountain Railroad.
The guy who built that built my gym equipment.
There you go. Mm-hmm. So you can go on all his rides. But it was actually shut down for maintenance. But we were we went some
my chest press.
But we were just outing him as a shit builder, shit cowboy. Now listen, I'm coming for you. But I went on the Space Mountain, and I had, I need to be careful so people don't, it's a dry rope, all right, it looks like a dry rope, it's a dry rope, shush, and I was on, and you know, drivers are big units, so I got on this, and they put it down. They're like, actually, I don't know if that's entirely down. And I was like, I'll take a dry robe off. So then I took it off, and they're like, do we need an extender? And I was like, no, that's coat. So I took a coat off, and this is after I lost a bit of weight. So I think that's all right. Put that on, and it clicked in. And one of the guys was like, I think that's okay. And I was like, well, it's clicked. It feels good. Mm-hmm. And then Catherine had a full anxiety attack. She's like, I'm not, if that's not in, I'm not going on Space Mountain. And I was like, it's grand. Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, I don't mind. And after that point, you know, when you've caused so much of a fuss, you're like, if I do fall out and die, good, because I'll not be scunner anymore. You know what I mean? I deserve it. But
did you do the tower terror?
Yes, it was great.
It's a tightener, but the first year I went and done it, I remember I loved it, and I went back and I don't know if I was prepared enough for it or something the second time I went back, and the minute it started I was like, not a good place. My feelings were wrong about this ride.
But see, the feeling, it's weird on rides, it does give you like forced anxiety feeling, you know, in your tummy. You're like, well, so if you're already feeling a wee bit edgy, and you go on one of those.
I do. See, when I like, had been a while since I've been to Disneyland, like it's been a good few years, like I've been to Disneyland Paris about 6-7 times. I fucking love it.
Like, that was the first time I've been to the Paris one, but I had been to Florida a couple of times, and then I went to Anaheim once, which I just want to say, Anaheim's the worst. It's not as good.
What the fuck's Anaheim?
It's the original California one. First, but I did enjoy it at all. Not that I did enjoy it at all, it just wasn't as good as the other two. But I think in Florida, when I went there the first time, I think they had on the Tower of Terror, they had, you know, the bars go over your knee, bars, and you're quite stuck in. It's grand, and I liked it. And I think on it, you sort of go up and it moves and all, that goes forward. And in Paris, just straight up and down, it's just a wee seatbelt. So I remember when we were going down, my horse was off the ground. I'm like, this is fucking wild, you know. And Catherine was having the worst time of her life, because she's like, I'll be grand on this, but it was the up and down. Oh, I loved it. It was brilliant. And I just laughed my head off.
Did you ever see that YouTube video the wee fat kid goes on, and
that was me.
He slips out and said, Janice. And he proper was like this. I was like, I would die if that was me. Like,
oh, but you know what the ones that I hate the most are? See the wee ones, the kids' ones? It was like Cars or something. Yeah. You get in it and they just fucking whip you around. They're spinning circles and all. You get off that. You're like, what?
The Toy Story drop thing, and I was like, oh, it's just a wee kids ride, this one will be grand. Like, it wasn't grand. And the slinky thing,
oh, he goes right and quick, and it's not properly, there's a bit of space given that, and I was not with my 3-year-old, so I was shitting myself. I had her almost in like a clutch hold, like strangling her to be, don't you fall, because she's the sort that would, you know, stand up, look around, and you'd be like, sit the fuck down if you fall out. And that's, I'm super bad for like health and safety and getting paranoid about stuff and stressed out that kids are going to fall out of things or hurt themselves. And
did you see that thing that was on about the Willy Wonka land in Glasgow?
Yes.
I had an experience of that recently.
No, not the Willy Wonka land.
No, it wasn't Willy Wonka land, but we went to, I'm not going to mention any names, but we went to a local open farm.
Okay.
Took a wee nephew with us and stuff. And
is it still open or is it shut down after that?
I was near shut down after that day. I was fucking raging. I was sitting in the car park, like, trying to calm myself down, and I was like, I'm just gonna go, and I was like, no, stay. It was so disappointing. Like, it was just, there was nothing there.
So it was just like an open space.
It was an open farm, so it was like, but everybody rants and raves about it and stuff. Like, it was amazing. And then I got to the end of it, and like, there was like a load of tractor stuff. So I understand why a lot of the cultures would love it, but like,
they're all walking around the semis.
It's supposed to be an open. There was no animals. There was nothing
at all.
Like, there was this whole bit at the start, you walk around and there was like pens and there were signs for animals, and then there was just one field of chickens, and I was just like, well,
just animal
bloody farmer in the corner, my mate, he breeds chickens, like, you know what I mean, like, I could have went to his farm. I would honestly have seen more if I went to his farm, like 100% like. And then there was a petting area for small animals, and I'm not joking you,
there's just a guy in his 60s,
there was about 100 kids queued outside it to get in it, and I thought, God love them animals, like, that many kids coming through constantly all day, just like petting the back, clean off you, like. But I says the family, and I said, that's what I want the land, like. But never again, hey, never again.
No, but there's nothing worse than when you end up in something really shit that you think's going to be great, and you're like, what the fuck? Because we went to an open farm, and I'd give them a Ark Farm, tremendous.
Imagine if it's the same place.
No, it wasn't. Arc Farm's brilliant because it is really good, and they whip the puppies out now for you. So when there's their wee pets,
you weren't allowed
puppies.
To talk to the dogs in this one.
No,
I had to walk by a retriever and not talk to them.
Yeah.
There's a retriever in a cage. It's like, don't pet or talk to the working animals. I'm like, so you just posted. Oh, it was fucking pissed me off the whole
place. It sounds like a.
And then you walk past the person's house that owns the place, and there's like five Range Rovers at the front of it.
Well, that's how you do it. Crooks. That's how they get ahead. People, greedy crooks.
But 100 people trying to get a burger, too. Like, there's no chance of getting a burger or nothing. No. I was done. I was good for home. But it was family time, and it was one of them ones, like, if you put the big grumpy head on here, this is going to go down bad. And I didn't say anything.
Yeah.
But then everybody else started complaining, and I was like, okay, I'm going to join in now. Yeah.
See, that's what I have, one of these faces, which I've been told over the years looks grumpier. Like, I could be having a great day, and I just look grumpy.
Yeah. That, I have such a resting bitch face. And there's times when I go out at night and I am having a great time, and after the fifth person asks me what's wrong with me, or a fifth person tells me to smile, I'm no longer having a great time anymore. I'm now pissed off.
Because we had an argument about that recently. I was like, I'm in good form until you keep asking me why I'm in bad form. No, I'm in bad form. You fucking keep asking me why I'm in bad form. You know?
I just can't rock around like that all the time. It's just weird. Yeah. It's just whenever. So I get in that. I'm so paranoid about it now because. Whenever, what do you do when people come up and they go, smile?
Yeah.
It's so awkward, or what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And, like a stranger, especially. But so I'm getting in the habit now of not doing like this.
Yeah.
Where, so I'm like putting my tongue up or something like that, or like.
I look even weirder, I'll be honest, mate. That's it. He just said, what's he doing where?
I just try not to get that big, moody face look like when I'm out at night.
But then, you know what you need to do? You need to say, listen, I am happy, but the truth is, I have just a weird smile. Mm. And I'm like, no, you don't. Smile, and if you do, like, you know, Arnold in Terminator 2.
You'd be the same as me. Like, so I used to get wild, frustrated whenever I used to go to prides and stuff like that there. Mm-hmm. And you spend the whole day.
Like, sexually frustrated, people, or? Just
no, definitely not. Not for the end of the day. Whenever you get, loads of people come up to you, loads of people meet you, talk to you, get photos and all the rest of it. But you see at the end of the day, like when you used to go back on Instagram and stuff like that, there have been dozens and dozens of messages of people saying that, like, they seen me but they were too, like, you know, too nervous to come up and say hello and all this here. And you're like, why? Yeah. Like, you know. But then, you know, I remember saying this to John. John was like, you do know you're really... You are very intimidating. Mm-hmm. I was like, how am I intimidating?
Yeah. How the fuck am I intimidating? What are you fucking saying? Me intimidating?
And he's like, no, you are. Like, you're intimidating. And I was like, well, are you intimidating when we first hooked up? And he's like, yeah, I was shitting myself. And I was like, well, fair enough. Like, so I think I'm going to go to Pride this year with like one of them t-shirts.
Yeah.
Well, I was double thinking this year. I was like, you know, one of the ones that like free hugs type thing? Oh, you might get a bit sick of that, like a couple of hours in. Like,
yeah. You should get one that's, I am happy, I swear.
Perfect.
I'm happy, I swear.
And then, that's perfect.
Well, because I would like newer comedians sometimes come, like, be in a green room with me and be like, you're actually more sound than I thought. What did you think? He's like, oh, you just look like you're grumpy all the time. Like, I'm not grumpy. And another thing I do that doesn't mean I'm grumpy is, like, I don't know, I sigh a lot. I'd be like, and that's more like a, oh, let's go, you know? Yeah. Whereas sometimes people be like, oh, he's sad. And I'm like, I don't think I actually sigh when I'm pissed off and stuff. Yeah. You know, I don't think I go,
I do. I think sighing in our family, like my dad would always sigh when he's pissed off about something. So now we all naturally do it too. But yeah, especially in work and stuff like that, if I'm getting stressed about something, there'll just be like a big dad sigh comes in.
Yeah, and like, that's the thing. I think maybe this last week has been a real busy week. So I'm just like, I feel like my stress levels are high. And I find, do you ever, like, when you get anxiety and stressed out about stuff, how do you, like, come back and go, it's okay, chill out? Because I think the last 3 days I've just been like, everyone's asking me, what about this, what about this, how are these dates, what's happening here, what's this date, do you want to do this, do you want to do it here? And I'm like, yeah, I do, but just give me a second. Here, you even got back to me about those dates, and I got no time. And then, like, you're sitting at night, and then, like, because that's the thing you'd said earlier about the phone at bedtime. Mm-hmm. It that just fucks the brain.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get in the habit of reading before bed and just put the phone down, read my book, much better, and then I sleep better. But then whilst you think, I'm just about to doze over, you go, oh, I've thought of something I need to do tomorrow, yeah. And I'm mad for lists.
I set my phone now with this wee button, like a voice record, because I get amazing ideas at night before I go to bed. So I just grab it,
voice record. How do you just voice record off that?
I hold that button there.
What, that the off button?
Yeah, that's it recording now.
The top volume?
Yeah, no, see that wee one? What iPhone have you got?
Oh, no, you've got a new one.
You get this wee button. I'll probably turn that off now.
Oh, no.
And then it records. Yeah, that's it recording now. It's dead handy because I can just record it quickly. And then I've got it on my thing as well, the iWatch, if I don't want to grab my phone. And then I put the idea in that. Uh-huh. Some days I've got up the next day and it's like, so I'm no longer talking English.
Because I get that whenever I look at notes, rather than necessarily, obviously I haven't done my recording, but I'll look at it and go, what does that mean? Mm. Why have I written down pumpkin smile? Mm. Like, well, you know, and I'm like, in my mind at the time, like, it's going to be a great bit. And then you go, fuck, you know, you're stumped. And then you look back.
I love getting, like, I came self employed, 9 years ago? And I've always said, even before that, like, everything I used to be involved with and stuff, four or five times out of ten, ideas I have are absolute shite.
Yeah.
But the other times,
beezers.
Yeah. Like, and I come up with ideas for, like, all different businesses, different things and stuff. But then when you get a really good idea, and I go in, I have, like, fidgety stuff, like, so, like, balls, like, stress ball, like, just, like, anything, like, a fidget, even just clicking a pen, and you're just constantly clicking and go, to get the idea smashed out, like, and I love that side of, like, business and being self-employed, like, you know, if I could just get rid of everything else and do the creative bit, that's ideally where I want to be in life.
That's
like,
the shit, though, you can't, and it's the worst, because I like all that, but see all the admin side of things and remembering stuff. Mm. Mine fucking wild for taking on too many things and forgetting stuff. It's like, I remember a stupid wee idea that I've had and be able to talk about it for 10 minutes. But if you, like, again today, I had one where there was one of my mates, one of the comedians, have been like, listen, I've been offered a gig on Saturday. Is there a way I can? And I didn't even remember that I had booked them to do this gig, but we've rescheduled the gig anyway.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, you work away, mate. But I didn't even... And I'm like, fuck, imagine he had turned up.
Yeah. I would be very much so like that. Like, everyone has to go into my diary or everyone has to write down, because if I don't, there's a good chance that I'm going to forget it. Like,
and you're a hard diary man, aren't you? You've got a proper diary.
Yeah, like it's in phone, not like a paper one.
Oh, no, I'm a paper one. If it goes, it does not change.
It'll be lost. Like, it's the only thing I can go with losing, and God forbid if I ever did, because that phone would ruin lives. Like, but... is my phone. I'll lose everything else. I'll leave it lying at my hours. I am awful for that there. Like, but I don't know. I have areas in my life that I put a lot of focus in, and then all the wee areas around that there, shambles. But the main areas, like clockwork, like, do you know what I mean? But all the wee stuff around the outside, like, absolute mess.
Because that's the thing about running a business or being self-employed. Everyone's very bitty. Mm. You know, you can do so many different wee things and then other wee... And that's the thing. You maybe have a few wee things here and then they all add up and you're like, fuck, over. Yeah. Like, I was thinking today, I'm doing a gig tonight and I'm doing one gig where I'm trying to do a new 15 and I just want to do new stuff. But then I have a headline set that I'm driving to afterwards. So I'm like, fuck, I need to have two different sets. I need to have a surefire half an hour. It's going to just be... go down well, and I need to have the new 15 that I'm trying to figure out, which is and then trying to fit that into all, like, the chasing up and an admin and booking and sending invoices and shit. Sometimes you just need to go, right, just chill out, mate. Fucking hell.
Yeah, you'll get the stage you'll need to probably take somebody else on. Like, I got that stage last year and I took on, like, an assistant to help me, and then I took on a lot more work. I'm right back square one again.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But it is good having other people there, like, definitely, like, it just gives you more time to sort of be that bit creative and stuff, like, you know.
And then aside from the switch in training focus on the bodybuilding, what's the sort of goal? What are you working on at the minute? What are the
working on
goals?
Bear Strong, the book, at the moment.
That's right, because the last time you spoke, you were sort of at the... You had a lot of it down, but you had it... Where's that at the moment?
Yeah, there's chapters are starting to fly out now, like, and it's sort of coming together. I let some people read some of it, like, you know, a couple of chapters and stuff.
Oh, imagine that's a very vulnerable thing to go...
The fucking whole thing's vulnerable as hell, like, and it's very, like... there's a lot of people are excited for it. Like, a lot of people are excited for it, which is good, because that's spurring me on. Yeah. Like, you know, a lot of people are asking, you know, when's this book coming and stuff, which I'm glad of, mm-hmm. like, because that's just pure motivation. Like,
yeah.
do a couple of hours here, do a couple of hours there. But it's, like, it's coming together well, but it is very, like, I was rewriting a bit the other. So the way I want to have the book sort of set up is that it's like, you know, the book The Secret and stuff yes. like that, where you can lift the book, open a chapter, mm-hmm. read it, refresh you, remotivate you, and then put it back down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's the type of book you can always turn to again and get yep. a wee boost if you need a certain help, a certain thing that's going on in life. So I was writing a bit sort of about real dark times and bad times of life and stuff like that the other day, and throughout last week, like, and it was just like I had to walk away from it at a time, because I was like, it's like everything, when you go back over that stuff, it takes you to it, you're mm-hmm. there, and then you have to try to keep your mind good, you know what I mean? So
that's what I was going to ask you there, was it, when you do that, does it pull you back in, does it drop your whole mood, is it hard to do that, or is it therapeutic yeah, almost?
I sort of learned with doing the talks, so obviously all the talks is about stuff like that there. And I remember there was one year I'd done like maybe 4 or 5 talks in 1 week. Mm-hmm. And basically the following week I was back into full depression again, like
mm-hmm.
because I was reliving every day that depression and reliving the suicide attempt and all that time in my life and all. Like, and then the next day going and telling everybody about it again, and the next day telling everybody about it again and stuff. And I learned a really valuable lesson. It's like, if you're going to do this, you're going to share this story and, you know, try to help other people, well, you need to help yourself first. So, like, with, you know, even the busiest times of years for me is like Pride Month and International Men's Day and all that stuff. And, like, you know, just any themed weeks is when mm-hmm. businesses would bring you in quite a bit. And even when they're trying to book you like mad, it's like, no, I'm just going to do 2 and that's it. Like, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? And just keep it spread out, because if you don't look after yourself, you can't look after anybody else. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean?
And see to anybody listening or watching at the minute who might be maybe not knowing they're depressed or they're just feeling down or low, what would you be saying to them as the first sort of step to try to address it and try to look at lifting yourself?
I think the common thing people say is talk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a big one for talk. Like, I always say this in all my Bear Strong stuff. I have like go-to people in my life that I can go and have a conversation with, and that's good. As long as there's one of them in your life, that's all you need. But I wouldn't talk to absolutely everybody in my circle. Do you know what I mean? Even if I was, you know, having a bad time or being depressed now, I wouldn't tell my husband.
Mm-hmm.
Because simply, whenever I go home, I don't want an elephant in the room. Mm-hmm. And I always think there's too much pushing people to talk. Do you know what I mean? When it comes to my health, talking is important. Like, absolutely, you need to get it off you onto somebody else, whether that's a friend, family member, or a professional. It does help massively once you do that, but it doesn't mean you have to tell bloody everybody in your life what's going on. That's not what, in my mind, it should be. But I try to tell the way we Bear Strong, and I try to show people. I spent my whole career in strongman. And any professionals that I know in strongman, they spend thousands of pounds a year working with sports psychologists to make them a better athlete. They spend thousands of pounds a year on coaches to make them stronger athletes. There's no issue at all in spending money on coaching when it's physical therapy, but there's a stigma when it's mental therapy. And it's, you try to look at it in that athlete, pro athlete perspective. Every top athlete, no matter if it's your most famous footballer, golf player, famous strongman, whatever, they all work with sports psychologists because they all can understand how the ultimate importance of the psychology of the mind when it comes to sports performance. So basically, the same way, if you were sitting there and you told me if somebody had a physical medical condition,
mm-hmm.
what's the right thing to do? Go out and seek professional help. Don't get scammed or ripped off by anybody, like, but go and seek professional help so that this slight area of illness that you have now doesn't become a bigger thing.
Mm.
And just look at it like that. Like, stop thinking that that mental health is this stigma and stuff, and, you know, that it's a weakness. Definitely it's not a weakness or anything like that there. I found the most strongest people tend to be people who have mental health problems because they've so much going on in life. They've took on so much. They're doing so much. And they just get one wee thing wrong, which means that the mind doesn't keep up with everything that's going on, type of thing, you know. But yeah, definitely never ever be afraid to look at the professional help side of things, like, you know.
In terms of like recognizing it, is there a way? Because I mean, I don't think I would say I had a lot on in life at one point, sort of kids getting married, moving house, all that stuff, and I just start like I felt just constantly. Like, there was that sort of anxiety feeling in my stomach. I just felt miserable. I wasn't showering. I wasn't moving. I was afraid. I was actually afraid to go to the gym. The thought of going there was really making me really freak out. And then I went and spoke to the doctor about it, and he'd offered a few things. And because it was leading up to the wedding, he's like, you can take these antidepressants. I can prescribe these. However, they won't kick in to 6 weeks. And I'm thinking, they kick in bang on the wedding time. I'm like, that'll take away from the day. So I just went, no. And I felt personally from just saying that, I was like, oh, I'm not some sort of freak, you know. I know that's natural, and I was like, what was like a weight off my shoulders. So like so now from being through that, I kind of recognize like if I'm like looking in the mirror and my hair's like what's left of it's overgrown and my beard's scruffy, I'm wearing like a, I'm like, I need to do something here. So is there anything that you recognize if you're feeling you're on a slump, and would you say it's like to ride those out? Like the same way as if you're feeling great, that'll not last for constant. There's no way to say to people how to spot the signs.
I think you need to take action. Like I'm good now with myself personally. I know whenever so the thing about depression is, right, and I get asked this all the time, how do you cure your depression? To me, it's not curable. You can't cure depression. You might take tablets and stuff which mask the symptoms, but if you come off them tablets, you're going to have depression again. You can do things in life that help you totally manage it, that doesn't affect your life at all whatsoever. But it's the old saying with a black dog, if you've had it, it's always going to follow you, it's always going to be with you. And the minute you take your foot off the pedal and you don't stay on top of it, it just slowly creeps back in again. And I'm at the stage now, I'm smart enough or I'm educated enough in it that I can feel it creeping back in again, and I know what I've took the foot off the pedal with. I know that, you know, I haven't stayed on top of my training. I know that my diet's been bad and stuff. Like, see if I was to even go a week of really crap diet, like, straight away putting you into a bad place. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm not one of these GPs or PTs that are trying to preach to people and stuff like that, but diet does actually have a big deal to do with your mental health. So if you have any type of mental health problems and you have a bad diet, that is contributing quite a lot. But yeah, you need to take action to do certain things. I would always tell this story about being in a room, and it's a pitch black room, four walls, no doors, no windows, no light in the room at all. And that's how a lot of people would explain or what depression is like for them, just sitting in a chair in the middle of a room and just pure darkness. But when you actively like push yourself to go out and do one wee step, whatever it may be in your life, that'll help bring a bit of light in there. Like, it'll put a window in the room, it'll put a door in the room, it'll turn a light on, it'll put a side light on. All these wee steps, and you keep doing more and more and more and more of them, then eventually the room is filled with brightness. But the sitting there is, that's literally what will kill you if you stay within it. But the main thing as well with mental health is, it's on you. It's on the individual. You know, somebody, you know, listening to this and it's depressed, the reality check is it's on you, but there's loads of people out there that will help you and support you with it. Like, all the help in the world. It's like me telling you to get ready for that marathon. You know there's loads of coaches, you know there's loads of supplements, you know there's a lot of resources, but you had to go run the marathon. And it's the exact same with people who are trying to better their mental health. Everything's available to you. You've got everything. If anybody thinks, you know, easier said than done, big man, I know. I've been there. I understand what it's like. And, you know, I took the way out. I tried to take the way out. I was done with everything. And I look back and, you know, I suppose it's nearly 10 years ago now. Just short of 10 years ago. And I look back, everything's happened in them 10 years, and I'm just like, holy fuck. Like, imagine, like, if I missed that. Like, imagine if, you know, the parents didn't find me, and it was, you know, that, you know, imagine if I missed like all them things that's happened in the 10 years. My life in the last 8 years has been fucking incredible, mm-hmm. like incredible. Well, last 7 years, and to have missed out and all that, like everything from fucking the MTV shows to all the mm-hmm. media to TV to getting married to my nephew to the business mm-hmm. to Bear Strong, like just all this mad stuff that's happened in my life over the last 6-7 years. Like the idea that I could have ever missed that because I was in such a bad place in life, that's scary. Like, you know, that's really scary.
You know what? I think like that's a good, powerful way to finish off for today. So if people are looking to follow you, if they don't already, I'm sure a lot of you do, but if you don't already, where can they find you and where can they get
you? Bear Strong on Instagram, but Bear Strong anywhere you'll mm-hmm. find. Bear Strong McNaughton on Instagram, I think it is.
And then you're going to be doing the bodybuilding stage too.
I'm not going.
No stage. Like, oh, I was going to say, I'll come and watch.
I'm going to be like muscly bear. Yeah. Like, I'm not doing muscly thong bikinis. And I can't diet for that shit. Like, fuck that.
No, the paint. That's what I'd be doing. Ahead, you know, listen, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you again. Cheers anytime. All right, all the best. I'm the Slack Guy.